Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Yeah.
Here's John Williams.
But I don't want to. Hey, it's John. How are you? It's 108. I'm in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue looking at another sunny autumn day in downtown Chicago. What's up with that? On the show today, we'll preview the preview of the eclipse. I suppose you've heard enough about that already, but actually each time I hear something new and I get just a little more excited about it, we will have our team there on Monday, and it'll be during this show. It's 1:20 scheduled our time. It's 1:09 now, so about 11 minutes from now on Monday is when the eclipse will be happening. I'm also intrigued by the idea that the black dot will be racing across the country at a couple thousand miles an hour. Vroom. I mean, it's not just happening in Carbondale. It's happening in Oregon all the way down to the southeast part of the United States. Vroom, like that. I don't know that it makes a sound, but if it did, it would probably be something like that. So we'll talk to Steve Grzanich. Is it Steve Grzanich? No, it's Dave Schwann. Dave Schwann's going to say hi to us and to tell you a little bit about how you can experience it with us here on WGN in about a half an hour. Obviously, everybody is still talking today or recovering from the president's statements yesterday. And we, after the show, got the big whiteboard out and we said, okay, what are the talking points? What are the things you heard? What hits you? And the whiteboard completely got filled up. Do you want to talk about statues coming down and whose statues should or should not? Do you want to talk about the truth of what the president literally said or did not? Do you want to talk about the timing of it or not? I mean, the conversation goes in many directions. The Sun-Times headline today was Fake President. Headlines around the country are just shocked and alarmed. Editorial writers are shocked and alarmed. Fox News was shocked and alarmed.
The New York Post says they weren't all Nazis. That was their front page headline.
I think the mistake the president made yesterday, or maybe it wasn't a mistake, but people weren't buying it, was he was saying, look, we all saw what happened on TV, and it looked like a fair fight. The right was hitting the left was hitting the right. I am this much interested, but interested, in the fairness of that fight. Are both sides to blame for the bloodshed there that day? That is, that they inflicted upon each other. Only one person's responsible for the murder of that young woman, and that's the guy that was driving the car. But were the two sides responsible for the violence on each other? And that's the argument the president wants you and I to have. But that's a singular incident. The bigger picture, the one that he failed to grasp, you know, on purpose or otherwise, is that we cannot equivocate the Nazis, the skinheads, the white racists or supremacists, whatever we call those people, we cannot equivocate them with the people that are protesting what they stand for. You know, one's right, one's wrong. One's up, one's down. They are not the same thing. I found myself yesterday Googling alt-left. I'm not exactly sure what that is. I'm not exactly sure what alt-right is. I'm not sure that's a rabbit hole that going into actually produces a lot of value anyway. But there the president was, like a bully on a schoolyard, distracting from the first punch or sucker punching somebody or just making the whole thing not about what it really should be about. I think the most telling part of the president's press conference yesterday was the very end when he was walking away. I mean, this is a guy who just got done telling the media that they don't do their job, that they're fake, that they don't tell the truth. And that's coming from a guy who PolitiFact says lies 70% of the time. PolitiFact and FactCheck.org both constantly look at pronouncements from the president and from Nancy Pelosi and from athletes and entertainers. That's what they do. And somebody says something that is checkable and pronounced, then they say, well, let's just make sure that's true or not. And sometimes it is, and sometimes it isn't. Sometimes Democrats lie, sometimes Democrats tell the truth, vice versa with the Republicans. And the president's scorecard is 7 out of 10 statements are deemed false, mostly false, or liar, liar, pants on fire. 7 out of 10 times. His truthfulness is this. true 5% of the time, mostly true 12% of the time. So if you're just keeping score at home, when the president is talking, there is a 7 in 10 chance that what he's telling you is not true. And when he is speaking to you, there is a 17% chance that it is at least mostly true. That's not a real good scorecard, particularly since he then turns on the media and says they're not doing a good job, that the media lies, and that the reason that he was late in condemning what happened in Charlottesville is because he's not like most politicians. He doesn't just run off at the mouth or immediately tweet something. He waits until he has all of the facts. The facts he's looking for now are that there are 3 million illegal voters in the last election that denied him the popular vote. Now, he's already tweeted that he thinks that's the truth, but maybe we'll find out more truth about that down the road. So anyway, there he's going at the end of the press conference. You know, the damage has been done. You can't save it. So then he decides to, and Elif, we're ready, right? Say this.
Does anyone know I own a house in
Charlottesville?
Where is it? Oh, boy. It's going to be... It's in Charlottesville. You'll see.
Okay, stop right there. Does anybody know I own a house in Charlottesville? You can back it up to the beginning, Elif. Does anybody know I own a house in Charlottesville? This is what you do when you want to endear yourself to the locals. Hey, I'm one of you, too. I have a house here. The fact that he's just done everything that he's done over the last 2 days, but hey, I'm like you, I'm a local, I've got a house too, is not suddenly going to endear yourself. Nobody's going to slap themselves on the forehead and go, hey, what do you know, he's one of us, he's one of our guys. But that's the card he's playing here. And he says, did anybody know that I have a house in Charlottesville? It's gonna be. Wait a minute, do you have a house or are you gonna get a house? Play the beginning of that again, Elif.
I own a house in Charlottesville.
Where is it?
Oh boy, it's gonna be... It's in Charlottesville, you'll see.
Is it near the winery or something?
It is the winery.
Oh, okay, so whatever it's going to be, it's a wine. Oh, you own a winery. That's it. You have a winery in Charlottesville, and that's the house. The house is the wine. Okay, well, that's different, but now we're on to you have a winery. And then you find out today that he actually doesn't have a winery. It's licensed in his son's name, and it's not even a house. It's a lie. On the way out the door, he just lobbed one lie out because that's his fix. If the truth doesn't save him, then he'll just say things that aren't true. You've got to love the fact that yesterday Saturday, Barack Obama's tweet suddenly became the most liked tweet in Twitter history. You know this, right? No one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or his religion. People must learn to hate. If they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love. For love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite. That's Nelson Mandela in his autobiography in 1994. And the first line of that, appearing with the picture of the president looking at some children, no one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or the background of his religion, has been liked more than 3 million times. You can feel good about that. But I do have questions now about what happened that day. And that's Dan Seal on the line. Good. Okay. Dean is back on the line. And he joins us again on WGN Radio. Hi, Dean. Welcome back to our show. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thanks to be back, John.
He is with the Daily Progress. He is a reporter there. Dean, I know you've been listening online a little bit, but are you all still kind of keeping score there in Charlottesville about the president's assertion that at least it was a fair fight, that both sides kind of came armed and were equally guilty of beating up on each other?
You know, we're fully aware of the comments that the president made, but I don't know if you've read much of what we've put out so far, but it's not really seeping into our coverage so much. You know, as I said, I think the other day when we were speaking, we try not to let the national political sphere impact us too much. And we still have a lot going on the ground here in terms of, you know, the community coming together and just sort of healing from this tragedy.
But that is a local perspective, it would seem to me. I mean, you told us yesterday that those were outsiders mostly that were engaged in the battle. But it does seem as though the president was saying what happened on your streets that day was, a crime equal on both sides.
Again, we are fully aware that he said that. That said, I mean, we've been able to provide a copious amount of photos and video from that day showing plenty of aggression from both sides. Now, whether it was necessarily weapons being used by both sides, violence being perpetuated by both sides, I think the photos really speak for themselves.
And they show what?
And they show certainly people who are ready to assert their opinion strongly. But I don't think that there's really any evidence that of who first started throwing blows, I guess, out there on Saturday. Instead, I mean, when you've got, I think one of the bigger notes here is just that when you've got so many people crammed into such a small space, into these small streets, it's sort of not surprising, I'd say, that, a physicality to that aggression might break out.
Yeah. It was interesting to me, too, how there was this one set of reports I read said that, you have the protesters and the counter protesters, but then this sort of armed paramilitary group showed up and it wasn't clear what their purpose was there, but it made the cops nervous. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, there were certainly some groups who were out there on Saturday in support of the Unite the Right rally. That's obviously what drew them to the area. But some of these groups, I can think of one in particular, the group calling themselves the Three Percenters, who decided that they were coming out. I spoke to a couple of them on Saturday and decided to come out armed, thinking that this was really more of a rally that was united around not just the Confederate statues, but the freedom of speech and the need to protect people who are trying to engage in speech, even if it's unpopular. That said, when I spoke to them on Saturday, they were among the first people to leave the area once they realized that that wasn't really the purpose of the rally, at least not in the eyes of the majority of the people who had come in from out of town. So I witnessed a few scenes where some of these people who were armed were trying not to really engage the crowd in the way that other groups were. They were really trying to sort of stand their ground, but then quickly evacuate the area when they realized that chaos was going to ensue.
Yeah. Yeah.
I spoke to a few of them, and they also said that they had reached out to police and asked what purpose they might be able to serve on the ground there, if they could help in providing protection. The police, of course, told them that they did not need to and that they were not required for that. And so, like I said, once the chaos sort of broke out, they were among the first to kind of hit the road.
It's just amazing to me, Dean, that there was no fires. Nobody shot anybody. All of that hostility, all of that weaponry. And then this kind of odd group, this third-party peacekeeper force shows up. And, boy, the peace needed to be kept, but then they just kind of disbanded. And I read your police chief said that the reason his officers did not get more immediately engaged was when it really got out of hand, they felt that they didn't have sufficient armor on. They had to then go put on heavier duty combat gear, and that's why they weren't as quick to respond as they could have been. Is that your understanding as well?
I understand the comments made by the chief. That said, I think there are still some conflicting reports that we've heard from officers about their preparedness. And really, though, I think that, you talked about the fact that there were no shots fired. A lot of times I feel like what we've noticed is this is just sort of, it's about putting on the display more than actually engaging. So, you hear about some of the violence that erupted on the streets out there. Really, until things took an unfortunately fatal turn in the afternoon, it was really confined to just a lot of shoving and throwing bottles of water at one another, activating chemical agents. I don't think anybody was truly out there ready to engage in full-out violence. And so a lot of this sort of gets exploded in the news once you hear that people have actually become injured, that people have actually started getting arrested, that someone has actually died. Prior to that, I'd say, while I said it was aggressive, it wasn't as full scale of a conflict as I think some people might expect it to have been.
One last thing, Dean. So about the statue that this was maybe all about, that's kind of the spark that started the fire, right?
Right, purportedly.
Well, so what was the city's plan about that Robert E. Lee statue?
Well, so the city had already voted earlier this year to remove the statue. As you can tell from the pieces that have come out, it's now called Emancipation Park, but it had previously been called Lee Park. When the city made their decision to rename the park and take the statue down, it was immediately hit with a lawsuit from several people in Charlottesville, including some organizers of the Unite the Right rally. asking that it, or saying that it should not go down, and that the city was sort of overstepping its bounds and making such a claim. And so at this point, like I said, it has been renamed, but the statue, as far as we can tell, is going to remain erected until we come to some sort of legal conclusion on that lawsuit.
Are people guarding that statue right now? I can see it as being very symbolic.
I was actually there last night. We do have, you will notice if you walk by, there's more people in the park now on a sort of round-the-clock basis than there has been. As far as being guarded, though, not necessarily. I mean, we've, in light of Saturday's tragedy, some people have erected signs around the statue saying that the statue should be taken down and in its place there should be some form of memorial for the victim in Saturday's crash.
Yeah.
From the other side, we had one person from, I believe, North Carolina come up yesterday who had donned Confederate gear and was holding a Confederate flag and a rifle. He stood guard, I suppose you could say, outside of the statue for a short period of time in the morning, sort of trying to be the face of the other side of this conflict. But he was actually, not forcibly, but removed from that area by police after his presence sort of created a ruckus.
Okay, Dean, keep doing what you guys do over there, and I sure appreciate your time and patience with us here in Chicago. We'll visit with you again down the road.
All right, we're doing our best. Thanks so much, John. I appreciate it.
That's Dean Seal, and he is in Charlottesville with the Daily Progress. It's 1:24.
All of us online. WGNRadio.com.
If you're nearing retirement, this could get scary. If you're wondering how the current market, the political situation, the out-of-control national debt, global events, how all of that might affect your retirement plans, well, you're not alone. And Bill Geiger understands, and he's here to talk about that. You deal with a lot of successful couples.
Right.
Have had some form of a money manager in their life. That doesn't mean the money manager has necessarily been doing the right thing with their money, because what's right in your 20s or 30s could be completely different than what's right when you hit 55, right?
Steve, you're absolutely right, and I see this all the time. I'll pick up a portfolio and look at it, and it looks like a 30-year-old's. A 30-year-old can blow themselves up financially,
right?
And they've got 30 years to make it
to
back up
it,
again.
Sure.
But you're in your late 50s. You don't have 30 years to make up a big loss like that. So when you get to that age, your portfolio should shift. Instead of growth, 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 you should really be thinking about protect what I have, then grow it, and let's create some income that we're going to need.
If there's one thing you wish everybody that's listening to us now knew or would do in their late 50s and early 60s, other than visit Geiger Wealth Management, what would it be?
Really think seriously about how am I going to control the risk in my portfolio? And how am I going to create income?
Well, this is an excellent chance for you to get true, practical retirement planning. If you have at least $500,000 saved for retirement, you're off to a good start. But that's not enough, right? Just to have the money?
No, it's not.
That's why Bill has a truly special offer. Call Bill and Geiger Wealth Management at 800-681-2498. And Bill will sit with you personally and help you create a full-blown retirement plan, including optional guaranteed income for life. Now's the time for your money to start working for you. Call Geiger Wealth Management today. Be one of those first five callers at 800-681-2498, 800-681-2498.
Geiger Wealth Management is a financial services firm that offers a broad array of products and other services. Insurance offered through DeBlanco, Inc., licensed in Illinois.
Life is so fast and sometimes stressful. Even planning a little getaway can be stressful too, right? I'm John Williams. Take a relaxing cruise down the Mississippi on the riverboat Twilight. Brenda and I did. Depart from the Quad Cities, travel to Dubuque, spend the night in a lovely hotel, then cruise home the next day. Fares include delicious meals, overnight accommodations, shore tours. The river runs wide and relaxing. Couples, friends, families, visit riverboattwilight.com or call 1-800-331-1467. Schwani just walked through the studio. Little eclipse talk coming your way in just a second. Well, that is after the 1:30 news. Play ball, celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, and lots more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com today. Taking care of yourself and your family is no easy task. Riverside Healthcare can help. With a variety of primary and specialty care providers, Riverside has just the right help for you, the kids, the whole family. They got over a dozen locations, including the new campus in Frankfurt. So now getting the right care at the right place and right time is going to be easier than ever. Learn more about the nationally recognized Riverside Healthcare at riversidehealthcare.org. Riverside Healthcare, putting well within reach. Catherine's been holding. Hey, Catherine, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hey, John. I'm not sure. I need to talk to somebody smarter than me, and I think that's you.
Oh, no.
I'm trying to figure out this man who is our current president. How does he reconcile having a daughter who he is, as far as I'm concerned, he's mentally, incestuously in love with, who is Jewish? His favorite son-in-law is Jewish. His grandchildren are Jewish. How does he reconcile siding with these neo-Nazis, these KKK members, these people who, if they could, they probably would put his family members to death, or they would definitely harm them? How does he reconcile siding with them as opposed to his own family?
I don't know. Somebody else mentioned that to me today in the halls. It doesn't make any sense.
He's a sick, twisted man, and he really needs to be removed from office.
I'm sure he would say that he's not doing what you're accusing him of, that he's not siding with the Nazis. But why is it so hard for him to specifically name and denounce them? I can't answer that.
Because if it were my child and my child were of the race or the religion or the creed that these people detest, I would denounce them. I would have no problem. As a matter of fact, I would convert.
Good for you. Hey, Catherine, good for you. You know, because I'm not Jewish and I'm not black. I mean, I'm not there are very few minority tags that I've had the burden of bearing in my life. I'm quite privileged. And even I see how reprehensible it is. But if I were Jewish or black or something like that, and the white nationalists were rallying, I would say something like this. Hey, Dad, you know that thing you... How does that not come up? How do you not go, hey, Dad, that thing you said about the Nazis not being as bad as the other side, could we talk about that? Because I'm a little offended by that. I don't know how that goes.
I so agree with that. How does Ivanka not go and talk to her father and say, Dad, do you remember I'm Jewish and my children are Jewish and my husband is Jewish?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I believe Jared is quite devout, too.
And so is she. She has to have been because she has to be because she converted, and the children have to be as well.
Interesting question, Catherine. Thanks for the call.
Thank you, John.
Do the news here. You know, the promo, the commercial that we ran for the show. I said, so what are we going to do about it? We reached out to pretty much every Republican congressman in the Illinois delegation.
Busy?
All of them have declined coming on. Unable to join us are Roskamen, Shimkus, and LaHood, and Kinzinger, and. And I don't know who else is on that list. Tammy Duckworth's available. And I said, thank you, Tammy. She's extraordinarily relevant in this conversation, but I think a couple things could or should happen. What if Twitter closed Trump's account? Imagine how that would lower the temperature in the room. They could. They do it all the time to people. What if they just said, we're closing your account. You will no longer have access to Twitter. He could do Facebook. He could do press conferences. He could do whatever he wants. You cannot use our platform. I don't know if that's fair or not. We'll have that conversation maybe another day. But what if they did that? What if, as a protest, you and I don't know, stopped paying taxes? I don't know exactly how you even do that. I'm not advocating violence. I'm not saying let's burn down the post office. I'm saying rather than sit there and take it, I wonder what sort of thing we could do to say we're no longer going to participate in a government that has that man as the leader.
Go to Boston, we find a boat with a bunch of tea on it.
It's the equivalent of that. I mean, you know, Ro Khan and them were kidding about dumping sweetened beverages in the Illinois River here, the Chicago River. I don't know what the equivalent of that is. But I think all of us sitting there tweeting and texting and Facebook posting and arguing with one another on the radio about it, not even arguing, just lamenting, that so isn't getting anything done. And I'm wondering if you had any ideas for options that would make it better or that would lower the temperature or would do something demonstrable that would say, I'm not going to be a victim of this anymore. I'm going to do, and then I don't know what the end of that sentence is. My number is 312-981-7200. Text me your idea on that. 312-981-7200. We'll do the news. Dave Schwann's in the building. We want to talk a little bit about what's going to happen Monday with our news guy that's going to be there. Just a quick summary of some of the texts that have come in the first 45 minutes here. John, Donald Trump would just open a new Twitter account if they closed his current one. I was suggesting somebody else did that Twitter shut him off completely. I suppose they could, but he'd probably find another way to pop up, huh? Hey, John, boycott the Trump brand, including hotels and golf courses. John, what about the Constitution, says 219 area code? Free speech isn't free. If you can only say agreeable things, whether we like it or not, they had a permit to march. This one says, John, will you even say that the Antifa, the anti-fascists, are evil? They were there only to confront the white supremacists with violence. They're all idiots. John, no one has addressed the possibility of age-related mental illness. I recognize many symptoms of that in our president. Hey, John, I'm not a proponent of violence, but doesn't it matter the name, the purpose, the cause in which the violence is perpetuated? Couple more. John, the president is known for doubling down on his bad decisions. This one from 847 says, John, I find it really hard to believe that Trump hadn't even contacted Heather Heyer's mother as of Tuesday afternoon. And finally, John, you're so biased. I'm not racist, but those people did have a permit to express their beliefs. If we take away their rights, who's next? Me? You? It's 1:43. We'll go back to this topic in the 2 o'clock hour. Dave Schwann's in our studio from WGN Radio News. Hi, Dave. How are you?
John, good to see you. Good afternoon.
I didn't know that you were. Are you a science geek, per se?
Up to an extent. I wouldn't go as far as, you know, it's like anything else. You can go into a subject and just go on and on and on and on and on. But I am fascinated by just the basics of astronomy and the basics of physics and that sort of thing. And
well,
what makes the world go around?
Well, that's exactly what's happening here, isn't it? So Todd Manley, or did they draw straws? How did you get to be one of the people going down for the coverage?
I had talked with Todd and Stephanie earlier this year about this.
Really?
I was looking.
Oh, by the way, you're now a geek. All that other stuff, you're a geek.
I guess so. I was looking at some of the information that was out there and knew that this was coming and didn't really know the exact time yet, you know, sometime around April or May. And as I say, earlier this year, I thought, would you be interested in having some reports, you know, from the scene in Carbondale, which is going to be in what's called the Path of Totality? And they said, sure. And then Steve Grzanich, of course, was interested as well. And now Patty Vasquez. So there'll be three of us down there covering this.
Where are you going to be?
I will be out and around in Carbondale. What I want to do is get a feel for what's going on. I want to do my best to try to impart to our listeners how things feel there. You know, what are the feelings and emotions of the various people that are there, and really what my own feelings are. How many of us have ever seen anything like this?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's nothing else like this.
Yeah.
And most of us know. I'm interested, too, in what draws people there. I guess that's what you're saying, right? Like, some people are going to get married. They want to sort of cement their vows at that moment. That's profound. I know some people want to conceive.
Right.
Which I kind of get, you know, 9 months. Be interesting to see if there's a little baby burst in the
at 1:20 on Monday afternoon.
9 months forward, if because I get that. I don't know what else people want to sort of mark the moment by other than observing it, but I'm sure there's all sorts of reasons people are there.
There are, and as you say, weddings and conceptions and just the fact that they would be able to tell family members and friends, you know, down the road, we actually saw something like this. Of course, the weather plays a part in this. We were just looking at the forecast.
Yeah,
you and I
are looking at it. 87.
Partly sunny, 87 for Carbondale, and about that here. So, you know, it's kind of catch as catch can. We'll see exactly what it's going to be like.
I wonder if you would have this option. Say this is the forecast for Marion or Carbondale, St. Louis, someplace close enough. Carbondale may be cloudy, but 10, 15 miles down the road, it may be sunny.
It could be sunny. That's right.
I mean, you want to almost get in your van and zoom.
And zoom over there, sure.
Like the tornado chasers or the eclipse chaser.
That would be northwest from Carbondale to around Murfreesboro or something like that.
Yeah.
And then just go along those lines back up toward Edwardsville and ultimately St. Louis.
I suppose you could get an airplane and fly in the hole, you know, the black dot. Just follow it.
NASA is doing just that. There are going to be special planes that NASA and the government and astronomers and the people that follow this will be doing. They're also sending up weather balloons way, way up there and shooting down
right,
to
that
the
would be
earth,
cool
to look at what is, you know, what it is like from up above.
Yeah.
And one of the things that the people like at people our friends at the Adler Planetarium or NASA or others will be studying is in the path of totality, when it is totally dark, looking at the sun's corona. They want to study that feathery like outcropping from that black disk. One of the reasons why is they just don't know why that is unbelievably hotter than the center of the sun. The center of the sun is several thousand degrees, but that outer shell there, the corona, is several million degrees. Why the big difference? And how does that affect us?
I'm also still interested. That's fascinating. I really find all of this science stuff cool. I'm also interested in the human element. Like, okay, so Sam in the totality. Maybe I would want to call my wife and tell her I love her. You know, like sort of like when, you know, Barack Obama got elected, or maybe Donald Trump for that matter. But when something gigantic happens and the whole country or world is experiencing at the same time, you suddenly want to reach out to when the Cubs won the World Series. What'd you do? You picked up your kid's phone. Sure. You say, I love you. Sure. I'm so happy we're sharing this moment, even if on the phone.
Right.
So I wonder if people will be doing that. Or
I'm sure they will.
Maybe you will pray. You know, you want to take this magical moment and you know, mark it with prayer, acknowledge God and thank him for the wonder of the universe, or I don't know what people want.
Yeah, anything like that. And again,
sing a song.
As Steve pointed out in his series, there was no social media in 1979, and that last eclipse didn't get anywhere close to here. It was just in a part of the western United States. But now it will be through here, and all of the U.S. will be affected by
this. You know
what
I want you to do, though? I want you to tell people that have got their smartphones out and they're taking pictures of it. Go, no, pictures will exist.
Oh, yes.
Experience it, live it, be it, think it, feel it, you know?
Right, right. Don't just be taking pictures. John, we cannot stress this enough, and we can't repeat this enough. You must wear those special glasses if you're looking at this, because you will run the risk of permanent eye damage.
Except for the totality, which is
right.
Like, so
except
for a couple of minutes, but I guess I hope the PA announcer there in Carbondale is going to say, okay, glasses on, glasses off, because I can see, in fact, now that you mention it, don't you know there's going to be stories of people with burned corneas?
Yes.
Come
burned corneas,
Tuesday.
Burned retinas.
Yeah.
You will be hearing that. And then, you know, they may say, well, no one told us. Well, we've done our best to tell you.
The problem is people are having trouble getting getting those glasses, too.
Right. The people that are going to be at the stadium at SIU will get a pair, you know, with their paid admission to get into the stadium. They'll get a pair of glasses with that. But, again, I cannot stress this enough. We cannot stress this enough. When you're looking at this, you must wear that prior to and after totality.
Okay, hold it right there. It's 149. We'll pause. Pick it up here. You've got a question, comment, an observation. I'd like to hear. Remember, Monday in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll be all about this. But maybe you've got something to say, comment on, or observe right now. 312-981-7200. So Steve Grzanich is going to be in Carbondale. Dave Schwann is in our studio, also from our newsroom. And Patty Vasquez, who wears many hats capably here, but certainly one of our hosts is going to be down there as well on Monday. So in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll be talking about it. And as we are all sitting here in the 1 o'clock hour today, we're asking you for your questions, comments, observations, and on line two, Kevin, what did you want to say? You're on WGN. Hi.
Hello. Good afternoon. I just want to say it's kind of in a way it's like God's winking at us. He's watching over us, and he's letting us know, hey, I'm still here.
I think that's cool, Kevin. I think anybody, you can read anything in this you want to, and if that's a takeaway, I love that. Thank you for the call. From Kevin, we go to Ray. You're on WGN. Ray, what can we do for you?
Oh, yeah, I was wondering if I could watch the eclipse through a telescope that's a reflection. You know, it's got a mirror reflector on there.
NASA says that you can get filters for telescopes and binoculars, but don't just get ones that block out the sun for the purposes of photography or looking into the sky. You need to get ones that are specially coded, and the NASA website has the ones. So if you're thinking, oh, I'll look at a through a telescope mirror or through binoculars, you can, but you have to have the right coded filter. So be careful with that, all right, Ray?
All right, thank you very much.
Good luck to you on that. In fact, here's another question like that. Hey, Jim, you're on WGN. What did you want to say?
Is it safe to watch the eclipse through a mirror?
What did you see about that?
We found some information about this. A household mirror can be used, but you must cover the mirror with a piece of paper or a card with a hole in it. So, you know, the old-fashioned way of looking at an eclipse where you had, you know, it project through a piece of paper or a box and then project the image. That's the way to do it. It project the pinhole image of the eclipse onto the on the far wall.
Right, but what I hear... I wouldn't do it directly.
I would not look at the mirror directly.
Is that what you're thinking about doing? Look at the mirror directly and then watch it? Don't do that. Okay? Okay, I think he dropped off. Let's go to Matthew then. Matthew, what can we do for you? You're on WGN.
Greetings to you, John.
Hey, what's up?
It's my understanding that, and I've done this before, I'm not a welder, but it's if you are a welder or you know a welder, if you look through a welder's lens, you can look at the eclipse safely.
Right. Keep this number handy, though, 12. The shade of the glass on a welder's helmet has different numerical values. You want it 12 or higher.
Okay.
In fact, you know what I'm going to do? Thank you for the call. Is I'm just going to look at a welder looking at the eclipse. That's the way I'm going to experience. I'm just going to watch a welder. I'm not going to look it through the goggles. I don't know. I thought that was
going to watch
be,
him looking.
I even thought that was going to be funny. Evidently, it wasn't. You do the best you can. I'm no Bill Leff. And finally, Denny, you had a question that again I'm not sure we can answer. But Denny, what's on your mind? You're on the air.
Hey, thanks, guys. Well, one, I'm super excited for this. I think this will be one of those life, certainly a lifetime thing. But what would be, in your opinion, the best way to photograph the eclipse? I mean, granted, I know the cell phones and all, but is there a certain type of film, you know, old school cameras that have a certain film, or is there something you recommend that you could get that perfect shot while it's in total, you know, 100%.
I like that question. I mean, you know, here I am telling people that I want you to experience it, not just point your smartphone at it. But if you are going to photograph it with film or digitally, how can you best do that?
I have seen things where if you take a regular pair of good sunglasses and put it over the lens as a filter, as a protection, you may not get the best picture. You know, it's not the high-end stuff that the professionals are going to be using, but it's something that will protect the lens and the workings of the camera.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Well, here's what I'll do then. Let's do this. Tomorrow in the 1 o'clock hour, where it's 1:57, we got to go for the news, but tomorrow let's come back to that. If you're going to use your phone or a digital camera, an SLR or a film camera, what's the best way to do it? And frankly, I think a selfie would be kind of cool. You know, there I am with a black hole in the sky. I mean, that would be kind of swell. And we got some texts about this, too. But all of that has to come after the news. And you're going to join us on Monday, right, my friend?
Oh, absolutely.
Dave, thank you
yes,
for coming
sir.
By.
I'll be available from Sunday evening through Monday afternoon. You bet.
We're only sending the best there. So Dave Schwann's on the team. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, John.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Thank you, Steve. All right, I got a couple of them here for you. Hold on, I'm just scrolling through something. I'm not really paying attention to the show, which really isn't a big thought when you think about it. Stand by! At 209 on WGN, we're in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. Thanks to all of you who called in with interesting questions about and comments and observations about the eclipse. Steve, I'm telling you, I'm getting more and more ramped up. It's like, you know, you say, I'm not into the Super Bowl. I don't care. My team's not in. I don't like sports. And then you get
close
the 2 weeks and you go, maybe we should have a party.
Okay, but
that's me.
Again, here, we're not going to notice it much, right?
Yeah, but... No, we won't. You wouldn't notice it was happening.
All right, that's what I was telling people, and then others were saying, no, it's the case. But
87% coverage. We'll have 87% coverage here. 13% is still enough to make it look like a hazy day.
Okay.
You won't know.
Well, that's disappointing.
It is totally disappointing. That's why we got to – let's go. Let's go down to Carbondale. I went to school there. Come on, we'll go see my old dorm room.
How crowded could it be?
It's really, they think 300,000 people will be down there. Southern Illinois has 3,000 hotel rooms.
Okay,
people don't go to Southern Illinois.
You drive in?
Yeah, right. Actually, that's it. You don't even need a hotel room. My sister was just going to drive down for the day, pull over, look up, and then come back.
Right.
It's a long day.
If you get close, you know, it's still going to pay off for you.
Well, here's what you do, I think, then, in that case. I don't know if you're going to do that, but you drive down, you go up, look, don't burn your corneas or retinas or whatever, and then maybe you only come back as far as Springfield because it's 6 hours down, and it's, you know, depending on where you're listening to us,
right.
It's 9 hours down, whatever.
My friends in Manteno have a little lemonade stand right along I-57 there. Stop in for refreshment.
I'll bet there will be price surges in Southern Illinois at B&Bs and Airbnbs and hotels and motels. Hey, there's a nice segue, John, to the price surge story from yesterday. Here's a headline in the Chicago Tribune. City Hall does not approve of surge ride share pricing after that L delay yesterday. We got into this big time yesterday. You know,
you got into it big time. It wasn't a wee.
And yet, here I am, validated by one of the great newspapers in this country. City Hall does not approve of surge ride pricing. Huh, let's read more.
We were so excited about this yesterday.
Red, brown, and purple line trains were stopped. There was a tragic situation. A man stepped in front of a train, apparent suicide. So they have this body on the tracks, and the trains are shut down all morning long. The Tribune writes, shuttle buses were deployed, but huge crowds of people trying to get work had few options. Some people turned up to work hours late after trying to navigate new impromptu system of buses and shuttles. If they took on apps for Uber or Lyft, they were met with surge pricing. It's unfortunate. This is a spokesperson for the Department of Business Affairs. It's unfortunate that at least two rideshare companies chose to take advantage, Steve, their words, take advantage of this morning's difficult commuter situation. Spokesperson for Lyft said we did everything we could.
Well, that's not true.
We did everything we could to increase the supply of drivers. If there had been more drivers, the price would have gone down. That's the way the algorithm works. But when I get to be king, you will not be able to charge, pick the multiplier, 5X. Nothing higher than that. So if it's a $9 ride for you normally, they will not be able to charge more than $45 or $50. Not
so you're okay with $45 or $50? You are not.
Well, I'm not okay with $110.
No.
So I, you know, now it's just a matter of degree. I'm not sure where the line is, but maybe it's below $110. I mean, you and I think could agree that that's the wrong side of permissible.
Right. So the driver is doing no more work than she would be.
Right.
If there were lots of drivers
around.
They're
sitting in more traffic. They're going slower, too. I mean,
maybe.
I drove in yesterday. It was a nightmare.
Was it?
Well, to the degree, you know, really, there's a first world problem. Some people are living nightmares. I was driving down Broadway and Clark Street.
Oh.
I don't know. So I survived. Trust
Did
me,
you?
I'm going to
yeah.
be okay.
Okay, good.
But, I mean, it was grueling. It was a very long stop and go, ride the brakes all the way to work, ride. And it's not normally that way. Meanwhile, Uber and Lyft were making a fortune on that yesterday. I'm not sure they're super duper motivated to fix a situation like that.
The Ubers and the Lyfts?
Yeah.
So who does make the money? Because you were talking to a driver, and you said the driver picks up most of that?
That's what I said, but he didn't confirm that.
Oh, okay.
But it's got to be a better day for him. I mean, if the company's making $110, he's got to be getting, I don't know, just help me out. If you drive Uber or Lyft, do you get 50% more or less of each fare? You've got to be getting more than 50% of the fare because I'm only paying like 10 bucks. You better be getting five of those or I'm going to start walking.
No one believes that's true.
Believes what's true?
That you're going to start walking.
So here's another observation I have about Uber and Lyft. As you know, I live near Wrigley Field.
Yes.
So they
still waiting to be invited to a game. But go ahead.
Cubs were you're invited to a game, Steve. Here's how you get invited, and here's how you get to go. You buy tickets, and then you can go to the game.
Hey, I'm going
to
go in a couple weeks. Can I park at your joint?
Yeah, Brenda said I got to stop saying yes to that. She goes, you tell everyone
Brenda. You
know, yeah, come on, park at our place. We have an 8-flat. And so we share one extra parking space with 7 other tenants. And I'm always telling people, we got an extra spot. Brenda said, we have 1/7 of an extra spot.
Wait,
so
you're giving away a community spot at your building?
How is yes a bad answer?
Oh, well, that's worse than price surging for Uber.
I don't know what you're even saying. Sure, it's a fine thing. There's nothing wrong with that.
Okay. Here's what you do. You wait for, you, when you give me a spot, mm-hmm. and then you go and park in the street.
Right.
And then I park in your numbered spot.
Right, right. I've thought about that strategy. There's a number of ways to do it. But at the end of the day, it's my space and then one other shared space. And I've been giving it away to everybody.
No, that's you can't do that.
That's what Brenda said.
No, that's bad form.
So I'm afraid you didn't make the cut, Steve.
I wouldn't take that spot.
Oh, yeah, you wouldn't.
No.
Oh, yeah, you wouldn't.
I would take your spot. Is your spot numbered?
Yeah. So then my car then has to go to the free shared spot?
No, you just park on the street. You get home.
Oh, I
park
see.
On the street. Then your number spot is open
spot.
For me.
Yeah, I suppose
you got a
that's
sticker.
An option. But there's a lot. It's parking over there by Wrigley's really tough. That's not why I bring this up. Here's my point. So this is what I've noticed, though.
It's Wednesday, by the way. Next Wednesday,
the game that you're going to.
Yeah, go
so
ahead. I'm sorry.
What,
go ahead.
Here's what you've noticed about Uber and Lyft, and I was trying to figure out what bugs me about them so much. If you take a cab. You go, hey, taxi. The cab pulls up, you get in the cab, and you go. And then when the cab gets you to wherever you're going, you jump out of the cab, and away the cab goes. If you take Uber or Lyft, they pull up, and then they wait, and they wait, and they wait until you get there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're all supposed to be there, and it's supposed to be a very quick transaction. But I've seen so many Uber and Lyft cars that are coordinating with the person that's coming out of the game, and they stop in the middle of traffic. And some of these roads already have cars parked on either side, but they're not moving. Because they've got their blinkers on and they're on the phone working out this thing. Meanwhile, cars are backed up forever. And it's not just at a Cubs game. It's at any communal space. This happens all the time. The police need to crack down on that.
How long have you been there in the neighborhood? I mean, you're sounding like one of them already. I mean, just so you know.
A few months.
Yeah, the transformation's already happened.
What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, we don't want them on our street.
I know.
They're slowing me down. You're going to start going to the community meetings about the new bars opening up in town.
I got to tell you, once upon a time, when I lived in LaGrange Park, and they'd say, we don't like all of these extra concerts at Wrigley Field. And I'm like, well, then don't live at Wrigley Field.
Right. It was now their
that
first.
Now that I can hear the organ in between innings of the games,
yeah.
I'm very involved in the community use of my area. And I think we're overdoing it. Getting back to my problem with Uber, though. So I
two weeks ago, you're like, yeah, I can hear the organ between the innings. Okay, go ahead.
So I really think that there needs to be some other sort of, enforcement of how Uber and Lyft drivers block traffic as they wait for their rides. And it happens everywhere. I'm not just advocating for my neighborhood mm-hmm. here. I think it's a problem. And I don't know what the solution is. But I think if the cops come along, they just... You need to blast your horn and say, move it along, Uber. You can't tie up this road that way. You may care to agree with me at 312-981-7200, but I think it's a real problem. By the way, Elif, what are you hearing on the phones over there?
Well, speaking of surge pricing, I have three different answers. One was 80%. Another was 75% of the share that the driver gets.
Right.
And the company gets the rest. But the third person
that's
says...
That's pretty good, though.
Well, but the third person said it's 30%, and that's why surge pricing exists, to act as motivation for the drivers.
To get out. But, I mean, well, a real motivation would be if they get 70 or 80%. The higher the percentage, the more the motivation, right? So... Let's say you get 70%. It's $110. So some of the Uber and Lyft drivers were making $70, $80 yesterday. That's amazing. I'm sorry. I just don't think that's a reasonable price for the service that you're providing. And remember, the city regulates taxis. There's rules and rates. There's policies that the cabs have to follow. Ask the cab driver if he's able to charge $80. No, he's not. Why? Because that's not good. That's not fair. It should be the same way with Uber and Lyft. It's 219. Huh. All our phone lines are ringing. I wonder why. Uh-oh. This is something Steve Bertrand was reporting on earlier. Our president speaking to us via Twitter. Donald Trump's account says, rather than putting pressure on the business people of the Manufacturing Council and Strategy and Policy Forum, I am ending both. Thank you all! Exclamation point. So the president has decided to disband the Manufacturing Council, that seven members quit, because he said he doesn't want to put pressure on those business people. Rather than putting pressure on the business people of the Manufacturing Council, I am ending both. Thank you all! Thank you, everybody! There's nobody in the room, but thank you! Thank you for helping out. Okay. And by the way, I think that's really a tough call for those business people that are on those sorts of policy forums, those sort of advisory panels. I mean, do you say yes or no? And if you say yes and you're on it and then the president does some wackadoodle, do you stay on it and then you suffer the consequences? Do you quit? That looks bad. You know, there's no upside. I think the way to minimize the damage or the potential for harming your brand is to simply not participate, which is you know, everybody loses when that happens too. It's 2:24. Okay, we're talking about surge pricing in Chicago, which took place the other day. I'm not a fan of it. I also am worried about the fact that Uber drivers just sit and block traffic when people are trying to get about with their lives. Sometimes it's just not safe. Sergey wanted to say something. You're on WGN. Hi, thanks for joining us.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Thanks for calling. What do you want to say?
Well, I drive for Uber, and first of all, surge pricing is just like gas prices. You know, when gas prices go up in the summer, there's a reason for it. There's supply and demand. You can't fight that. So the other day, it was unfortunate. The guy killed himself. Everybody couldn't really take a bus or a train, so they wanted a ride. Well, there's only a certain number of drivers in the morning. So that's what happened there.
Yeah.
But remember, when we're waiting for someone, it's because they request a ride. What I always tell people is, if you're not ready, don't request a ride. Don't be still up in the upper deck, you know, saying, oh,
yeah,
we'll be right down.
Exactly.
You know, wait for, and they expect to be picked up at Clark and Edison.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
So I would say educate your rider, your listeners, whoever rides, to not request until they are absolutely ready.
Yeah, that's great advice. Sergey, thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. You gave us some helpful information there. I'm going to go from you to Mike. You're on WGN. Jump in there, Mike. What did you want to say?
Well, I'm sorry. I just wanted to say how ignorant Uber and Lyft drivers are in downtown Chicago.
Why?
Why? Because they will crack you. I've seen them crack U-turns in the middle of State Street just to pick up somebody.
Yeah, right. Right. No, I've seen that too. I've seen them make dangerous U-turns on Michigan Avenue because I sit in this window all day long, and you just go, guys, but that's the difference between cabs and these ride sharing apps. A cab, you're not going to hail a southbound cab if you're going north, and the cab's not going to be there for you. But if you request an Uber and they're heading south, then they got to do that turn, and sometimes they do crazy things to get there. And I don't know what the solution is, but I think we need to talk about that. There needs to be either some different rules or some different enforcement or a change in the app. You know, like if you request a ride and the vehicle gets there and you're not there, the clock is running. And if you don't get in that car within 60 seconds, that fare is canceled. You're no longer eligible for that ride. Don't ask me how that works. I'm just thinking out loud here. Mike, thanks for the call. We go from you to Dan. You're on GN. What do you want to say, Dan?
Yes, I'm an Uber driver, and like, if you're picking up somebody on Michigan Ave, there are certain spots, but sometimes you have no choice but to be in that right-hand lane, and sometimes you can't find the people, and it just makes it very difficult
in
certain spots in the city, because I always try and not block traffic.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I shouldn't paint all of you with the same brush. And Michigan Avenue, as popular as it is, must be the most, with the buses and everything else, that must be impossible to find people.
Well, it is tough, but hopefully you're in the right lane, and that's the slowest lane because the buses are all in that lane.
Yeah.
And hopefully you find that person, you got a red light, and they can just hop in the car.
If it's what percentage of the fare do you get, Dan?
Well, I get 75%.
Yeah. So
if you joined up like 3 years ago, you'd be getting 80%.
Huh. What about surge pricing? So if it's a $100 fare, do you get 75% of that as well?
Yes, that is correct.
Were you driving yesterday morning?
I was not.
Yeah, yeah. Do they alert you? Go, hey, ding, 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 get in your car because it's surge pricing time. Do you have any way of knowing that you can jump in on that?
No, you'll only know if you actually open up the app and see where it's surging. But
yeah.
They might send you something like out by the airport. If it's real busy, they'll send you something. But that's the only notification I've ever gotten.
That's funny because you'd think in an instant like this, they know. They know if the price is surging. Why don't they just send out an APB to all of their drivers? Ding, ding, ding. Notify you on your phone. Get in your car. Go.
Yeah, well, it depends on where you're at. Like, I live all the way on the south side. And if it's surging downtown, by the time I got downtown, it could not be surging. So
yeah,
it depends on where you're at.
Yeah, I feel you. Hey, listen, thanks for the call, Dan. Appreciate the heads up. Thank you, Steve. You know why I'm playing this, don't you? Elvis Presley.
Hunka Hunka Burning Love.
40 years ago today, he passed away. You know, little cultural touchstones like this are just getting buried in the news and the contention of the day. And
my brain is flaming. I don't know which way to go.
Were we not all in the place we're in, we'd be probably talking more Elvis today. One last call about our price gouging thing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, just listen to this. Why are you laughing?
I'm not laughing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Your Honor, playback the tape. I'd like a rereading of the transcript from 10 seconds ago.
I was audibly exhaling. Go ahead, please.
The record would show that that was a laugh. This is Ed. You're on WGN. Ed, what can we do for you?
Well, I would like to know, if I went into a court of law, is there a certain limit of how much you can gouge? I remember when I was a kid, there was a hurricane coming to Texas. Some, you know, clever guys went out and bought all the plywood, sold it for like 8 times what it was a sheet, and I heard they had gotten arrested. So loan sharks, when I was a kid, if you had 20 or 25%, but now they're a business and they can get 35% for their, you know, payday loans. And I was just wondering if there's ever a breaking point on the percentage of profit that you can make if I went in front of a judge.
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know.
It depends on what you pay the judge.
Well, I forgot we're in Chicago. But, I mean,
there must be a definition of that.
Like 900 times what it costs.
Yeah. Well, I think there are laws regarding public safety or in times of emergency. Like, I think it is illegal to jack up the price of plywood at the time of a hurricane. But I think you can set whatever price for lemonade you want.
Well, like getting to work isn't as important, right? Like if
no, because one train line is down, I don't think that would qualify.
All right, but suppose there was a reason. Thank you for the call. You got us going down an interesting path, Ed. There must be a definition of price gouging, and if it's against the law, what do the laws say about that? And are they applicable in Illinois or Chicago? Do we have a definition of price gouging here? Why isn't that applicable?
Well, I would imagine the law is written for specific instances, not just, you know.
All right, let me ask you this.
A rainy day. I don't think a rainy day would apply.
What about after 9/11 when the cost of gas went up? People were charging $20 a gallon of gas. People were just in a panic, and they said, oh, boy, we got them now. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Let's jack up the price of gas. Gas went like, it was insane what gas cost at some stations. It was just that way for a day or so, and then it came down.
I don't remember that, but, I mean, I don't doubt it.
I remember that.
So that would have been the supply?
I think that was the fear.
Right?
I mean, the supply didn't suddenly dwindle, but they thought it might. By the way, my estimated probability of accuracy of the anecdote I just shared with you?
Yeah?
67%.
Okay. Well, I mean, I could see that happening. It makes sense that you know, it's a commodity that people might have thought that was
going to
be the case.
I know the price went up. I don't remember what it was.
Right.
But it was insane. It was shocking. It was like, oh, no, our world is, you know, you just didn't know what was going to happen next. And then you saw very tangible things like the cost of gas going up.
But then that would be hard
because that's
a commodity. So they're pricing it based on what they think is going to be there. They had real reason to think that there might be limits. So that I'm going down with legal.
I don't want to play the ethic card because I don't think that's really all that important in a conversation like this. If I'm trying to argue the law, you know, like what should you literally be able to do? I do kind of resent people taking advantage of a situation, but like a previous texter said, then don't pay the money, walk. But I wonder if the law should just reflect that a little bit.
Well, I think that Uber operates under the law. They're not. No,
we make the rules. I mean,
there are ride-sharing regulations and ride-sharing rules in the city.
City council can do whatever they want.
I understand that, but they can put
a cap on that.
And here's what they did: they didn't put a cap on it, or maybe they put a cap on it, but it's still less than $175 to get downtown on a rainy day.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I'm not sure where that line is, but I think Ed's raising a good point. We all know what price gouging is, and we all say that's bad. How is this not that? That's all I'm asking.
Well, it because it doesn't have to do with a safety or life or death sort of situation.
Well, okay, all right, but I didn't.
I mean,
know
what
that...
if the Cubs win the World Series and you've got the last Chris Bryant jerseys? Is it wrong for you to charge eight times what you would normally charge?
So it's okay to gouge people if everything is going fine. I'm not even sure what I just said there. But
I'm not sure I like the word gouge. Because,
well, I know that's the only thing I got right now.
Right.
Because you're right. I have long argued that you ought to be able to charge what the market will bear. Secondary market for tickets, for instance.
If you're in Flint and you're charging eight times the normal rate for bottled water, I'm sure that there's probably a law against that.
They shouldn't be doing that.
They should not be doing that. That has to do with public safety and a basic necessity. If you want to buy a Robin Ventura jersey, you know, that, and there's a real run on them.
And it's autographed.
Okay, wait, let me get something more believable.
No, I get it. Ventura would be fine.
But yeah, so think of it that way. If you've got the last 15 jerseys, no one's going to call you a dope for, you know, jacking up the price on them.
Getting what the price will bear. There's a note from the folks over at Skydeck, Chicago at Willis Tower. So the Aaron Waters show is this weekend, Thursday and Friday. Tomorrow and Friday, they're going to, I think, be doing the rehearsals. And then Saturday and Sunday, I think it's the event from 10 to 3. So at Skydeck in Chicago, from 11 to 3, they have what they call the Picnic in the Sky. And here's an interesting argument, Steve. So it's limited visibility up there, only so many seats. They get to charge whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
For $100 to $150 per person, you can enjoy a gourmet picnic on the 99th floor of Skydeck, enjoying views of up to 50 miles in four states and a rare opportunity to see the high-flying show at eye level. I think that would be very awesome. Randy Stancic. Hey, Randy, this is John Williams. How are you?
Hi, John. Doing very well, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good. Is that an apt description of what you all are up to over there?
Yes, but we are not charging as much as we could charge for this. We're trying to do this, bring some locals back to see the place, and stay pretty cool while you check out the planes at eye level.
Yeah, no kidding. So how many seats do you have available, and are some still open? Can I still get in?
Yeah, absolutely. We currently have about 50 people and about 20 tables sold. We probably have another 20 to 25 available. That make it very comfortable up there. It's about 10,000-11,000 square feet on the 99th floor of Willis Tower. And as the planes go by the east side, we've got plenty of nice little spots for people to check it out and have a nice memory.
I guess you see it all, right? Because there's nothing that's, well, actually, there could be tall buildings in front of you that would block the view. Do you see it all?
We see the planes. The planes are picked up in every which direction because you do have 360 views. Even though there's a table there, you're free to roam around the perimeter and check it all out. The water show is a little harder to see because
right.
That's obviously, you know, with the buildings in the way. But the planes are, it's a really interesting perspective from this angle, getting a look at the slow ones, the fast ones, certainly very memorable.
Do you hear it, or are you blocked with the glass walls and all?
You can hear the big boys go, and I'm not sure if it's Blue Angels this year or Thunderbirds, but they tend to use the buildings for pylons, the Angels do, and they get pretty close, and you hear them before they actually show up in sight sometimes. So it's definitely a cool perspective.
What do you mean they use the buildings for pylons?
They don't get real close, but kind of like, you know, what? They're out there doing their practice runs, and they can zip around a little bit more than the average plane can, and definitely put a nice show on for our guests during the trial runs.
So you're doing this on Saturday, are you?
Yeah, Saturday's the formal picnic in the sky, visitation for the air show trials. You'll even see some starting tomorrow. A couple will start hitting the air.
Right.
And then the formal trials are on Friday. So it's kind of neat. You kind of see some of the smaller ones over the next, I think, tomorrow, and then trials will hit Friday, and then the full-blown show over the weekend.
Well, I could come by for lunch Friday and just watch from there as well, right?
Well, we offer food. This is a special thing since we're not a restaurant. We're going to reservation-based through Friday for Saturday's event. And, again, a nice table, a nice gourmet picnic lunch. You get a VIP entry up to the top. We're going to keep it around 72 degrees, and we have a couple drinks thrown in, too. So for $100 per person, it's a pretty good value.
That's called Skydeck. It's called the Picnic in the Sky. Am I right about that?
Correct.
And yes. But are you able to, do you have access to the roof? Can I get on top as well?
We don't have access to the roof, but you're on the 99th floor, and it will only be a hand. Like I'd mentioned, it's 50 people right now. If we had another 30, 40, 50 people between now and Saturday, it's a pretty intimate place on 99. But then you also have a chance to go to the 103rd floor, which is the primary Skydeck floor, where we have the ledge, the glass floor balcony. So you get a visit to the ledge, you get the 99th floor, you get viewing of the planes, gourmet lunch, drinks, and an incredible takeaway.
11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Saturday the 19th at the Willis Tower, the annual Picnic in the Sky, theskydeck.com for tickets, theskydeck.com.
You got it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Randy, good luck to you guys over there. Have fun.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks
bye.
For your time.
Oh, yeah, bye now. That was not a commercial. When I saw that, though, I just thought, oh, that's pretty cool. That may be a little pricey for you. Maybe you're not going to do that, but if you want to, I think it's nice to know that's an option. That sounds like fun to me. It's 248 on WGN. By the way, thank you, Skillful. It's 252 on WGN. Just one quick word about the president's tweet. We read it to you a little bit ago. President tweeted that he's going to disband that president's manufacturing council, a group of business advisors. He said he's going to disband it because it was... What was the exact word? I just closed the tweet.
He wanted to relieve the pressure on them.
Oh, yeah, relieve the pressure on them. So I'm not sure if it's the political pressure or it's just busy executives don't have time to always participate in these volunteer councils.
Well, that tweet, though, came as one of those councils was meeting via conference call with the idea that people expected it to disband on its own, just so you know.
He said, okay, thank you, everybody, but I'm just going to go ahead and cancel it now.
Right.
Yeah. Headline on CNN is Trump disbands business groups after CEOs flee. So it's kind of, did you quit or were you fired? Either way, you know, sometimes you, it's like, if you don't quit, we're going to fire you. If you don't disband us, we're all going to quit it anyway. So it's, at the end of the day, you no longer have a business council.
Well, it's more damaging for him if people continue to leave one by one, but there were also... There was some reporting that many of the people on the council thought it would be more effective if they all resigned en masse.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, that might have been coming out of this conference call. They might have thought that was coming, too. So rather than suffer that indignity, you know, the president can say, I dissolve you and ease your pressure that way.
So the CEO from Merck was the first
right.
African-American businessman.
The unions went yesterday, AFL-CIO.
Two AFL-CIO leaders, a trade group leader, Intel and Armor are out. 3M today announced that they were out. By the way, this was tweeted. I'm WGN King John on Twitter. I'm WGN King John on Twitter. And Jesse tweeted at me, hey, at WGN King John. Steve Bertrand said, the clownsels were disbanded. Hashtag Freudian slip, LOL. I know you just slightly stumbled on that. I don't think it was a Freudian slip.
It might have been. You can't.
But I did kind of laugh when that happened.
I'm happy to be here for you, friend.
They were a clownsel. If ever there was a clownsel. Actually, you know, these are the titans of industry. I mean, really, we're talking about Under Armour and Intel and 3M, for crying
Merck.
Out loud. Merck.
Campbell's Soup.
And when these businessmen and women who did not declare their political allegiance to the president but would do well as businesses if the president's tax plan, there are now I go, the president's tax plan gets approved, I could see how they would want to participate in something that sort of expedites that.
You didn't say tax plan, did you?
I swear to God I did, and I sure didn't mean to, but I mean, I could see how they're like, okay, this is not an endorsement of the man, even the administration,
no, this is what
but
you
the
do.
Policies.
It's part of business.
Absolutely
you're,
it
you're
is.
There to advise. It's an advisory council. It's not a political fundraising council.
And the president made it sound as though they have a sort of, he didn't say patriotic duty, but when he was asked about that, he said, well, they're letting the American people down. I can see how you would be driven by business or patriotism or service to the country. Let's help forge a plan or policy that's good for the country. But you can see how that's a double-edged sword for these poor guys and gals now, too. If you do decide to participate on that level and then things go bad for you, then now you're kind of stuck. And I sympathize with them when they find themselves in that position. By the way, you also had to laugh, just speaking of chuckling at something. This is from, I'm not sure where this is from, maybe the Wall Street Journal. So Barack Obama tweeted, no one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin or his background or religion. And last I checked, that had 3.4 million likes and 1.3 million retweets, 53,000 comments. The tweet has been liked more than 3 million times and makes Barack Obama's tweet on Saturday now the most liked tweet of all time, eclipsing a tweet from Ariana Grande following the attack at her concert in Manchester. Obama's reaction to the Charlottesville attack is also the fifth most retweeted tweet, behind a tweet from a teen who wanted free chicken nuggets from Wendy's. So as profound as that was, it's still not as awesome to the Twitterverse. And granted, it didn't have as much time as the kid who wanted free chicken nuggets from Wendy's. Then there was the Ellen DeGeneres tweet from the 2014 Oscars. And then the tweet from Lewis Tomlinson to his One Direction bandmate Harry Styles and Ariana Grande's previously mentioned tweet. So those are the Twitter stars. This is also getting some traction today. Mary Schmeek, I know, commented on it, and it's actually a PBS piece about Robert E. Lee. People are now interested in statues and whose memorials or monuments we should keep up or tear down. At the center of the Unite the Right rally that turned deadly in Charlottesville last weekend was a protest of the city's plan to remove a statue of Robert E. Lee. But Lee himself never wanted such monuments built. Quote, I think it wiser, the retired military leader wrote about a proposed Gettysburg Memorial in 1869, quote, not to keep open the sores of war, but to follow the examples of those nations who endeavored to obliterate the marks of civil strife, to commit to oblivion the feelings engendered. He died in 1870, just 5 years after the Civil War ended, contributing to his rise as a romantic symbol of the lost cause for some white Southerners. But he said that he did not want a cult of personality for the South. In no way would Lee want a statue of Lee up there today for the very reason that we're talking about it today. Rokan Anadvlantis have strolled into the studio, not without the usual 17 lemonades, iced teas, and coffees that you guys bring
in. A lot of beverages required for broadcast.
College football teams in the South do not come in with the beverages that you guys come in with.
I just got to tell you that this is a very thirsty business. This is a very thirsty industry.
You are using your mouth.
Yes.
So I get that.
That's what
we're
doing.
Stay hydrated. Yeah. Stay hydrated. It's key to life and broadcasting.
And caffeinated.
Yeah, one thing I want to tell you right now, John. You don't want to end up like me. You got to drink. Hit him high, hit him low. Run to the left, run to the right.
Thanks, Coach Fox.
Thank you, Coach.
We're always trying to get him to get a glass of water.
Does the sports department concur that that's what happened to the coach, that they're not paying attention and they're not?
I think he took a shot to the throat or something. I know we always get a complaint when
Coach
Fox...
Oh, aren't you going to feel bad now?
I know. Yes. No, I actually don't. Until he wins more than three games, I don't feel bad. I got a whole lot riding on this right now, and
it's not his voice that's causing him to win or lose games.
No, it's definitely not. That's not the issue, and we might have a great season.
Yeah,
I got to
tell you, Ro, you have really. You're going to be sorry if they win more than half their games.
No,
this year.
I'm not.
You're going to be on the wrong side of history, my friend.
All I'm going to say is that Mitchell Trubisky shall lead us. Now that I saw him play, I've changed my attitude. I have a whole new. Anna, am I right? Am I lying?
You know, actually, he started off several days very, very optimistic. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. There's stuff going on in the news that I would think would really trouble you at this moment. And he says, you know what? I'm thinking about Trubisky and the Bears and the future.
Yes.
So where are you? How many games will we win in the regular season?
Well, before I was at a 5.5. I was on the under, and 5.5 is the over-under for the season. It depends on when they actually get wise enough, or if he's – we haven't seen him play in a real circumstance yet, but if he's ready, they're going to put him in the minute he's ready.
It does make us look pathetic and desperate that in a half of the first preseason scrimmage – I mean, really.
That's all we needed for hope.
Oh, my God, we're going to win now.
Against the second and third stringers.
Jesus.
That's the life of a Bears fan.
These
moments don't come around that often. We're still, literally, the Super Bowl Bears, we're still celebrating them.
That's
three and a half decades later.
I'm amazed at that.
Three plus decades later.
What are you guys talking about on the radio today besides that?
Michael Steele's going to join us.
Yay.
Good for him. I called every congressional representative on the Republican Party in our state. None of them would come on today.
Nothing would. I know. Everyone's everyone's ducking.
Kind of bowing.
But, you know, Michael is now in the fake media world. So he's going to join us to talk about this. I cannot wait to hear his perspective on this.
Well, he's still carrying the torch for the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
That's his heart. That's his head.
Mm-hmm.
What does he say about this?
We'll find out.
What time is he coming on?
At 3:20.
All right.
So that's
you don't have to wait long.
20 minutes. 20
yeah,
minutes.
No kidding.
Tamon Bradley is going to join us from Springfield. School funding got testy, and schools have already started open. So how are they paying for themselves? What's going to happen there? Felonious Monk, who's been on the show a number of times, is a comedian and actor here in Chicago. Very socially conscious guy. He was on TV with us this morning or this afternoon on Windy City Live, and he has some. He has some thoughts on this that I think people are going to, because he comes at this from a very different kind of an experience. It's almost like a, you know, what is it like to be an African-American who thought that the world had changed very positively in that, or not very, but had changed positively mm-hmm. in turn, not even about Barack Obama, just about life. Life's different. The images, the perception is different. But is it really?
Well, do you think that Charlottesville means that we've changed that much? I mean, those people were there all
changed.
Along.
Exactly.
Trump's been president for a while. I mean,
it seems like a lot. It's only been like 210 days. But yeah, it does seem like a while.
I think if you gauge what's happened since Charlottesville, what you are hearing is people aghast. You know, if you said, where's America's heart? They do not tolerate that.
No,
and they don't tolerate the people that do. I mean, I wonder if there's any consolation to.
I think this is a moment where, but it is scary that these folks believe that they have quarter with a president who has been ambiguous at best about it. And he goes, oh, I've said it, I've decried it. But, you know, there's a difference between the words that you say and the emotions behind them. It's very clear to people watching this that he was forced to make that statement on Monday.
Mm-hmm. Well, he had three moments, didn't he? He had mm-hmm. Saturday when he spoke from his heart and said and equivocated. Then he spoke the next day where he read a speech somebody wrote, and mm-hmm. then he was more moderate. And then you had that crazy press conference yesterday where he was back to the Saturday version.
That many say showed exactly who he was and what he believes and who he is.
You guys have a good show.
Oh, and Cato Kalin's going to be here, too.
Oh, yeah, Cato. Yeah,
we're going to let him sleep in the studio. Really no, he's really going to be here. Yeah.
Is he in town or is he on the phone?
He's going to be in town for Comic-Con, of course.
That's
I don't
nice.
Know. You know, now that OJ's getting out again, he's making
money again.
Right. He's relevant for a very short period of time.